Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty. The only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the message. All these things are the spirit of guidance that speaks to the ears of the heart, and we'll talk about this today as well. And with that, we blow into our hands through the mandala of the mouth that has created these sacred words and phrases, and we bless ourselves. So today's class is relevant, I think, as we're in the Lenten season coming towards Easter. And we've also seen that on the unity of religious ideals that came through Gemma's beautiful study and work on for our benefit. There's so many celebrations in various religious traditions at this time of year. It's a season of renewal. We've gone through a season of kind of dormancy, at least nature shows us that, and there's a reemergence that's happening. And so this is also the symbol of the cross, where things come to rest and then things emerge, and we'll talk about that. So today's class is titled, it comes from a body of teachings, although I've drawn from other sources, from a text called The Smiling Forehead and the section on the deeper side of life. And this is on the mystical meaning of the cross, although in that paper or in that text, it's titled just The Cross. But Mercia talks about this, and in fact, we'll talk about the motions of the zikr as relative to the cross. So we proceed. Bismillah. These are the words of Vinayak Khan. He says, many think that this symbol has existed only from the time of Jesus Christ, and no doubt it became better known after the time of the Master. But in fact, this symbol is an ancient one, and it's been used at different times and in all ages by the mystics. It has mystical meanings. And those of you that have studied other traditions, for example, yantras or mandalas, or even looking at classical art and architecture, we see that this symbol of the cross emerges again and again. You know, we see that in the architecture of cathedrals, for example, but we see that also in the architecture of classical facades. We have the horizontals and we have the verticals. In classical painting, we see those symbols emerge again and again. There's an underlying structure that is a cross. Or those of you that have studied art know that when we're asked to draw the human face, we first draw an oval and then we draw a cross, that there's this symmetry to the face. So Mercia talks about this more, but now I'll let Mercia's words speak for himself. He says, the cross shows a vertical and a horizontal line. Everything that exists comes from these two lines and extends vertically and horizontally, as may be seen in a leaf as it develops. And again, the main vein and then the little branches off of. Likewise for a tree, flowers and bushes, same way, the vertical and the horizontals. So he says, as may be seen in the leaf, which develops in length and breadth. In its first meaning, therefore, the cross is manifestation. What is above shall come below, and it shall be manifest. It belongs also to the journey towards the spiritual ideal. And no better picture could be given of this journey than the cross. No better picture could be given of this journey than the cross. Now, the last few months we've worked with this practice, and I'd like to continue it with it again. Last month, Pierre Moynihan Clark wrote to me after the class I was invited to do for their organization. And he said that this practice really touched him. And again, it comes from a traditional practice that is drawn from a hadith of the Prophet Muhammad. It has been modernized in language and in verse by Murshid Samuel Lewis, and it was given to many of his disciples, of which I've learned it from Murshid Wali Ali and Murshid Mariam Baker. The words of it are, if you've come to the classes, you'll be familiar with it. It's Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone, and thou dost fill me spiritually. Let me see if I can copy these words, and I'll put them in the chat. If you go to view, I think, let me just look here for you for a moment. Is that correct? No, I've got to go here. Hold on a second, folks. View, show chat. If you want to grab these words, you'll be able to see them. I'm going to put them in the chat window for us. And hold on just a second. Let me maneuver back here. Sorry I didn't do this before class, but here they are. And again, in Zoom, you go to view, open chat, and you'll see the words there. I've also given the instructions, and this will be in the study guide. And as I said, Pir Muinuddin said he started doing this practice with the gestures of the zikr, which, of course, if you think about it, makes that same gesture as the cross. So I'll describe the practice, and then I'll just start doing it. We'll do it a few times together. If it touches you, please feel willing to take this up as a practice. I don't think it could do you any harm. If you have a living teacher, you might confer with them if this practice is something harmonious with your own practices. So we're going to sweep from left to right. There's an esoteric meaning here. Murshid talks about the left side of the body as being the limited self. So when we make this first gesture, which is Ya Allah, or we could say, Oh God, we move to the right shoulder, the right side of the body, which represents the unlimited, the ultimate self. Then we bow this, our heads, we'll say, Ya Allah, or we could say, Oh God, oh my God. And then we bow our head in love, reverence, and humility. I surrender to thee and to thee alone. And then we raise the head, and thou dost fill me spiritually. Just kind of tune in to the essence of the words. And if these words, I also feel very much, and I said this in the class with Pir Muinuddin's group, that this is the words so beautifully map onto the words from the Lord's Prayer. Thy will be done on earth, you know, thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It's the same essence as this. But these words are a little different. Let's try to do them together. Sweeping again from left to right, we'll say Ya Allah. And as the head comes down, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee, and to thee alone do I surrender. Head coming up, and thou dost fill me spiritually. So when we're sweeping out the chambers of the heart. We're trying to empty in a way so that we can truly surrender. You know, if we're full of ourselves, there's not much that we can offer up. But if we empty, we can truly empty of oneself, fill or allow ourselves to be filled by the divine. And that's why then we bow our head in love, reverence, and humility. And then we take a breath in and lift up, and thou dost fill me spiritually. It's like we're carving out the space, or we're polishing the empty cup when we make that first gesture from left to right. And we make sure that it gets poured fully out, empty, but then it gets filled again with the last phrase. So let's try it together. I'm going to close this window. Excuse me. There we go. All right. Ya Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone. And thou dost fill me spiritually. Yah Allah. In love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee and to thee alone do I surrender. And thou dost fill me spiritually. Yah Allah. In love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee, and to thee alone do I surrender. And thou dost fill me spiritually. Yah Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee, and to thee alone do I surrender. And thou dost fill me spiritually. Yah Allah, in love, reverence, and humility, I surrender to thee, and to thee alone do I surrender. And thou dost fill me spiritually. One could also make this sign of the cross while doing that practice. Over these months, when we've been doing it, it definitely has had its effect upon me. And I hope that you are also feeling the beautiful effect of that practice. These are the words of our beloved Murshid Inayat Khan. He says, by keen observation of light, one realizes that it is the nature of light. It is in the nature of light to form a perpendicular and horizontal line. So these two lines coming together as a cross. And if it is the nature of the external light to come from a cross and form a cross, it's also the nature of inner light. If you remember the picture that came in the email, which I hope was received and was also on Facebook and also on our website, that was an image that I took here from our balcony of a sunrise. And that was very interesting because it also made the cross, but it also looked like the human form. And we know that also our bodies from head to toe, from arm to arm outstretched is in fact the cross. So again, Murshid says, by keen observation of light, one realizes that the nature of light is to form perpendicular and a horizontal. He uses the word perpendicular, but is referring to a vertical line in its perpendicular mate. And if it is the nature of the external light to form a cross, it is also the nature of the inner light. The external light is the reflection of the inner light. I'm saying it again. The external light is the reflection of the inner light. And it is the nature of the inner light that is expressed in the outer light. They're one and the same. A mirror. It's a projection. It's both. And by this, one can see the inner light is not only manifested in the outer light, but the outer light is the picture of the inner light. Now, this is interesting because Murshid talks about this phrasing. I mean, he spent a lot of time. He's given us a whole paragraph talking about inner and outer. In other parts of the message of Inayat Khan, he talks about that our outer life is life, not light. Here he's speaking of light, but our life, our outer life is a reflection of our inner life. And our inner life is a reflection of our outer life. They're one and the same. I remember several years ago, I was getting ready to leave for a large gala event that had already taken place in New York, but they were doing one locally of honoring people of my professional organization as fellows. And I had been awarded such an honor. And I was speaking to Murshid Hidayat right before I left for the event. And he said, never forget, Nuria. My father always said, the outer life is the reflection of the inner life. And so he said, you can be assured that this is a witness of that. So think about that, take that in. And when one external life is presenting something, look deep within. What is this a reflection of? Or is that reflection from the inner obscured and not coming out? It's these are just words that we're reading of merchants, but the deeper meaning, that's what this says, the deeper side of life. I mean, if we study these phrases, it's like, oh Lord, what is he telling us here? Amazing instructions and things to contemplate. So I wanted to work with, if we could, a wazifa that relates to this, the inner light, the outer light, the hidden light, the manifest light. And of course, when we do the purification breaths, Mercha talks about that. I inhale divine light and life, and I radiate divine life and light. We're going to work with that here with this wazifa. Yanur Yahai. Now, you know, I'm always about more is better, but in this instance, for these practices, I'd like for you to take them very deeply and very slowly. And maybe if you want to do 99 or 101 a day, you break it up into smaller groups of 33 or 34, 34, 33 or 33, 33, 33. But do them very slowly, very subtly, very deeply. Now let's talk about what is Yanur. It's one of the sacred names of God, the divine names. Nur is the essence of light. Nur is the essence of light. When I was initiated by my Murshida, she said to me, she asked me, what do you think you need most in life? Well, there are so many answers that one could give. Happiness, peace, love. I mean, what's your answer? You have to ask yourself, what would my answer be? And mine was light. And she said, why? I said, because with light, everything becomes manifest and clear. And we need light for that. And she gave me the name Nuria. But also, before that, those of you that know Murshid Kabir Kitz, God rest his soul, she had asked him, because she made me wait. It was during a retreat. So I'd asked her, and then the next day I was to be initiated in. She said, I don't know this girl, Stephanie. Do you know much about her? What name would you give her? And he said, Nuria. So that was the day before she asked me what quality I think I thought I needed on my path. And I said, light. And of course, you know, it was really a wonderful circle. But at any rate, when Murshida Vera gave me that name, she said, with this name, it is the inner light that resides in all things, that reveals all things. So it's the light in you. It's the light in a flower. It's a light in a man-made object. It's the light in all of nature. But it's always trying to reveal itself to us. But not necessarily with these eyes. It's with these eyes in the heart. It's with these, not these ears, these ears in the heart. So Nur is self-revelatory light, but it's in all things, not just in God, not just in you, not just in me, it's in all things, but it's a matter of tuning to that bandwidth. And it's the light that shines out from the soul that illuminates all things. So you can take your light and you let it come out and touch the light within, whatever it is you're contemplating, to let it reveal itself, emerge to you, explain itself to you. I have a lot of conversations, but I think there was one recently that I was having with my sister, and she was talking about the quality of really listening to each other, how important that is. And it is. It's also important that we listen with these ears and hear the voice of the spirit of guidance, the divine guidance that's constantly coming from within. So, Nur is that whatever way we turn, we see the all-pervading light and life of Nur. And Murshid says, and it is said in the interpretations of Nur, that even in the darkness, it there's the light. And if you've read St. John of the Cross, The Dark Night of the Soul, they talk about it in that way where he says, we think we're in darkness, but the truth is the light is shining so bright, it's blinding us. It's like the eyes of the owl that are in severe pain when it is showered in light. So this is what it can be too for us. So sometimes when these difficulties arise, it's the light trying to come through. And so it's also said that what continues to live on in God, even after we die, whether that's a figurative death, a metaphorical death, or physical death, is this legacy of light. This light is constantly trying to emerge. So that's Nur. And then Yahai. There's an energy behind Yahai. It is called the perfection of everlasting life. So you see where Murshid's drawn this purification breath. I inhale divine Nur. I exhale divine Hai. So it's Nur Hai, Nur Hai. It's this undulating of these two words together. So it's the perfection of everlasting life. And it's the only thing that actually continues to live, this love, this light, this life. It's the life principle that never dies. It's, again, everlasting life. And it's inside every being. So while the body may die, and things may decay and fall away, there's another life that's emerging at the same time. And then Al-Hai is full of vitality. So when you're feeling depressed, when you're feeling tired, when you're feeling just spent, Yahai, 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 breathe in, breathe out. Do it with energy and force. And it's the inner life of the heart, Yahai, this inner light. Inner everlasting life, the energy, the inner life of the heart. And the repetition of Yahai, it again gives us a kind of vitality and an energy and a freedom. Sometimes we can feel so confined and constricted, and that makes us tired too. And Yahai, we can break the ties that keep us tied and tethered. We want to be free. We are meant to be free. And Yahai is also said, and this is from Physicians of the Heart, it is the antidote to the deadened condition of the heart that may be the result of grief or sorrow. And I know that when I fall into that, when I miss my loved ones, when I feel different stages of life emerging, I use Yahai. It gives me strength and courage. So use it in that way. Now what we're going to do, again, with this motion, we're invoking the name of Yur, not Yanur, and we're bringing the head down, striking. If Pierre Lyot was giving you this practice, he said, you use the head, like almost like that third eye. So we're drawing in with the third eye, bathing the heart, filling it with light. We use that third eye and we bring it down. He says, it's like you're crushing the rock of the ego that resides in the solar plexus, which is also the seat of intuition, which is also the seat of all divine intelligence, but it's covered up by this ego, which Mershon's going to talk about in a minute. But he said, break that ego open, you shatter it, and out of that emerges light and life. Okay, so now let's try it. We're going to chant in a beautiful tone, Yanur, bringing it in, and then we're going to use this force, Yahai. And we emerge with this light in life. Okay. So we'll do it. We're going to just do it 11 times. Okay. I'm talking a lot. This may be two glasses instead of one. Stay tuned. Yanur, Yahai. Yanur, Yahai. Yanur, Yahai. Yanur Yahai. Yanur Yahai. Yanur Yahai. Yanur Yahai. Yanur Yahai. Yanur Yahai. Yanuria. Yanur. Ya, hi. I hope you feel tingly and sparkly all over with that practice. Again, Anayat Khan. Joe, where is Kelsey? I see him. Okay. The words of Anayat Khan, our Sufi master. Our journey towards spiritual progress Our journey towards spiritual progress can be pictured as a cross. In the first place, our ego, ourself, is our enemy, and it stands as a hindrance to our progress. Feelings such as pride, conceit, selfishness, jealousy, envy, and contempt are all feelings which hurt others and which destroys one's own life and make one's own life full of misery, which it springs from this selfish personal feeling, the ego. The more egoistic, the more conceited, the more miserable a life a person has in the world, and the more makes the lives of others also miserable. This ego, in Sufi terminology, is called nafs, N-A-F-S, is a natural development in our life or heart. The more we know of the world, the more egoistic we become. And the more we understand and experience, the more materialistic we become. And then Murshid goes on to say, he's kind of trying to tell us hope is not all lost. He says, it is not that we bring these faults along with us when we are born. We arrive with innocence and with smiles and the babies, you know, whatever comes before it. Sometimes they cry, but a lot of times they're very happy. He says they have a willingness to become a friend to everyone who comes near, ready to cast a loving smile and a giggle on everyone, regardless of whether they're rich or poor, friend or foe. The same soul which comes with such purity of expression, develops a nature as it grows up in the world. All that is hurtful and harmful to oneself and to others. So we know this is true, especially as children. You know, often we're hurt or made fun of, or you know, but maybe there was a circumstance at home which wasn't nurturing, and so we have to develop this protection. So in a way, it does keep us safe, but at a certain point, we have to learn also how to peel this surface off so that we can become who we really are or really intended to be. Murshid says, it is in the world that as we grow up, we create the nafs or the ego. And yet at the same time, there is in the depth of the heart that goodness, which is divine goodness, that righteousness, which we have inherited from God in heaven. So it's still there, but sometimes we cover it up. I mean, my God, we see this in the world of politics or in the worlds of business oftentimes. I remember one time I was invited to a really amazing conference. It was a very high-end technology conference, of which I'm not. But I had developed a technique of creating art using color theory, and line and form. It was almost like screen printing with a dot matrix printer. Anyway, I had also been doing some fashion design using different techniques with blowing up and pixelating graphics and screen printing it on cloth. And so I was exhibited quite heavily in their art exhibit, but I was invited to speak to the full conference as an artist. And these are all guys that are like developers of net technologies at NASA and Sun computers and so on and so forth. So, but I remember some of the dignitaries that had put together the conference invited me out for a dinner, and they asked me what further I was doing with my work and in my life. And I remember we had a glass of wine, and I took my finger and I was circling the rim of the wine glass. And I said, "Do you want to know what I do, or do you want to know who I am?" And that made such an impression. I'm still friends with some of them, and one of them very much so. So, you know, it's not what we do that makes us who we are, although we may gain amazing qualities and attributes in that journey, but it's who are we really? This is important. So Murshid goes on to say, and then, okay, let me go back for just a minute. And then there's another nature which we've developed coming on earth. And then there arises a conflict, a struggle between these two natures. Did you have your hand up, Robert, or are you just? And when the nature which belongs to the depth, the deeper side of life, begins to feel that it's yearning for something. So I've mentioned this book. Some of my students that graduated some years ago have reached out to me. You know, they get to this certain stage, they accomplish their education, they have a good career underway for a number of years, and then it's like, wait, is this all there is? There's got to be something more. And I remember when I was younger and in college, one of my college professors suggested a book called Passages. Some of you may know it, I think. I can't remember that Neely, I think, is her last name. She had written this book. And you can unmute if you remember it, Nur Latifa, unmute. Do you remember her name?
It's Gail Sheely.
Yeah, Sheely. That's right. Thank you. And in the book, she talks about how we go through these passages, but she's talking about it in a developmental sense, from babies to, you know, from infancy to toddler to childhood to adolescence to young adult to mature adult. And this is the point. When we've arrived at a certain stage or accomplished those things that we feel we have chosen to accomplish or we're destined to accomplish, we may look around and say, isn't there something more? That's what Murshid, this yearning comes. And then there comes this constant conflict between that real self, the inner self, which is the original self, and this self that we've developed or kind of crafted, sculpted, that we present externally, and we sometimes confuse with our real self, but it's not. It's this other self, and it can hinder. While it would be the ideal that the outer life and the inner life perfectly reflects itself, it doesn't always. And so I'm sure I'm not alone in this, that we've all gone through this, and it can hinder our spiritual progress. And we have to choose. We have to look at that. And this is, of course, then pictured by the sign of the cross. And then Murshid goes on. I haven't get to talking so much. I have to take a drink of water. Water, the elixir of life. And the Murshid says, it is this which is the real, I got a little piece of ice with it, sorry, which is the real crucifixion. But with it, there comes still another crucifixion, which always follows and which every soul experiences for the perfection and liberation of every soul. And that depends on this. This is the real crucifixion, the part of the being which we have created and we think is our real self, and which is not the real self, although in one way it may appear that one has crucified one's own self. So again, it's like, here's an example. I don't know about all of you. I'm sure it's happened in your life, but I've had really an opportunity to meet some incredible beings in my life. And those incredible beings never make a claim. They're so natural. They don't talk about what they've acquired or their acclaim. They just simply are present and natural. You know, Mersha describes it as being natural. Mersha to diet, those of us that knew him, knew that's what he wanted us to all be, was try to be natural, natural. He had a booming voice, and he'd say, we're not trying to be spiritual beings. We are spiritual beings. He always said that. But we are spiritual beings in truth. But we've forgotten it because we've created this deluded self. Now, Merchant and Icon's words are, the mystery of perfection lies in annihilation. Not annihilation of the real self, but of the false self, of the false conception, which we have always cherished in our heart and has tortured us during our life. Do not we see this among our friends and acquaintances? Those who attract us, those whom we love and admire deeply, have always only one quality which can really attract us, and it's personality, with a capital P. But it's like that divine personality that shines forth. It's not only that their selflessness attracts us, but what propels us in life of others, the life of others, is nothing but the grossness of the knobs. Or one might call it the denseness or hardness of that self-created ego. Boy, oh boy, I have a lot of work to do. So there's this story that Merchant tells along the way, and it's this. He says, there's a poem of a great Persian poet, his name was Araki, who tells us that when he went to the gate of heaven and he knocked at the door, the voice answered, there's no place for anyone else in this abode. Go back to where you've come from. And so he went back. And after a long time, and after having gone through the process of bearing the cross and being crucified, he came again. And this time, full of that spirit of selflessness, everything was stripped away. And he knocked at the door, and the word came again. Who art thou? And he replied, thyself alone, for no one else exists save thee. This is the zikr. La ilaha illallah. There is nothing, only God is. It's a profound phrase that can transform us. We could just close this window now, all just stay and do our practices, and that could be it. La ilaha illallahu. That's it. It teaches you everything. But we have these other ways of displaying the teaching. And the voice said back when he replied, thyself alone, no one else exists save thee, said, enter into this abode, for now it belongs to thee. So here, empty of oneself, we become paradoxically everything, everything. Yeah, I have a little more time. Good. So I'd like to work with a third practice today. This is a practice I've given some of you, and we've worked with it. You know, all of these practices have many, many facets. And I'm always searching to know more and understand more about them. But mostly we do that by doing them. And so this practice is a kabod, ya kabod, ya basit. Now, if I was to give you the short version of kabod, it's the contractor, O divine contractor, or the one that draws everything in, okay? And basit is the expander. So we're constantly doing this. We breathe in, we expand, we release. We contract, the lungs are constantly expanding and contracting. But there's many layers of this. And I want to read you some things about this practice and the root of kabod. It comes from, if you've studied at all the Arabic language, you know it's consonant based. So, you know, it's the phonetic markings that Those are the vowel sounds, but they change the meaning of the root. And so kabd in its root is kabd, Q-B-D. And its meaning is to decrease. Okay, so that's what, in a way, we're trying to do. We're trying to slough off these layers and become humble. And it's to take hold of something. You know, it's like maybe when you were a little kid and you were trying to be feisty, maybe you got grabbed by your shirt collar, or the back of your neck, taking hold. And it's to seize, it's to grip, it's to catch. It's all these kinds of meanings. Kabd is that. And so that's the root of kabd. So it's not just contracting, but it's to hold. And for me, it becomes this, it's almost, and I find myself having to do this on a daily basis. I mean, I revealed last time about this whole weird thing that I'm going through since COVID. And so I'm just trying to grab hold of myself when I can sometimes feel myself reeling out. It's like, just grab myself, hold myself, look at these qualities that I'm trying to, my work, that's my work, that's my spiritual path. What's coming out that I need and I want to refine? I'm choosing to do that. So I'm grabbing hold of it. I'm seizing it. I'm trying to control it in a way. But it also means holding something in the hand, such as, so again, seizing it, controlling it, holding it, such as a sword handle. Now, why is that significant? Because in every spiritual tradition, we see that. Think. Saint Michael the Archangel, sword in hand. Saint George of the Cross, trying to slay the dragon, sword in hand. Manjushri, the Buddha of compassion, sword in hand. It is a perennial symbol that we see throughout different traditions. We see that on the battlefield. Krishna in his chariot. Come on, folks. This is an archetypal symbol. Meaning what? Meaning we're grasping hold of something. And we see this. We also see this in Buddhist terminology, Kali. No, in Hindu Kali. But we also have that in, there's also a deity in Tibetan Buddhism. You know, she's taking that head of ignorance and slicing it off. They seem like gruesome images, but what's that? The ego is the head. It's all the stuff that goes on up here. In Hinduism, they take the coconut and they break it and offer the beautiful elixir of the coconut water and white flesh to the deity. It's the coconut head. It is. I'm telling you, it's amazing when you think about it, what's going on with these rituals. It's that. Okay, so anyway. But it's this whole idea of this battle between good and evil, all right? It's the battle between the real self and the false self. It's the battle, really. What's the false self? It's our ignorance. But it could be, I mean, pride is ignorance, conceit is ignorance, jealousy is ignorance, envy is ignorance. You know, all of those things are ignorance. But in Manjushri symbology, you know, that's one I've studied in a lot, taken initiations and done but you know, he's there with this, he has a book, the Book of Wisdom. So he's always pictured with a beautiful book, which is scripture. And this is the remedy for this, cutting through the ignorance. So it's, we're trying to cut through our ignorance to this true unobscured wisdom to be revealed. Wisdom is symbolized with what? Light. Yanor yahai. Cut through it. Make sense? Okay. Now the other part, so that's all kabbat, all right? Now basit is different. So while we're withdrawing and holding, think of it this way. We're taking a big lump of coal, big dark lump of coal. And you know, Compton Rinpoche, my beautiful Buddhist master who's been reincarnated. Oh my God, it's so amazing. But anyway, he talks about this, you know, we see this lump of black earth sometimes, but if we take the time to polish it or crack it open, you know, there's this beautiful gem inside. Well, that's what we are. You're grasping it, you're holding it, you're holding it, you're holding it, compressing it, kabd, constriction, withholding, seizing, and then Basit. It means the one who stretches out one's hand in a gesture of graciousness and goodwill to help others. That's what it can mean. So when we try to perfect this personality, which isn't the little p personality, it's the big capital letters personality of God manifesting through us, we're doing this. We're offering this graciousness and goodwill to help uplift others. And we see it in His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. We saw it in Saint Mother Teresa. We see it in Malaya. You know, we see it in Gandhi. I mean, all these people, it was through their self-sacrifice for their creature comforts, for even their fame, they gave that up to become this lump of coal that when the beautiful purse opens, what falls out? It's like those movies, those 007 movies, that black velvet pouch, and you open and you pour out these beautiful diamonds that sparkle with light. That's who you are. That's where we're trying to get to, okay? Shall we try to do the practice and see if we can manifest that a little bit? Okay. So again, let's just do it 11 times. You can work with it as you wish in your own practice, but try to feel it. The number of times is important. It has a spiritual significance. But what's also important is what you're feeling in your heart for this practice and the realization. I've given you some words. You may have something that's even better you can share with us. But from doing the practice, I experience these things. I share them, and also my study. I try to bring that forward. So we're first going to start with Kabbat, that kind of contraction, that holding. And you can think of it, you know, now it's Lenten season. You can maybe take one thing that you want to try to transform in your life. One thought that maybe is habitual that you'd like to reform in a different way. Something that you'd like to refine, make it very fine. And just take this one thing and think about grasping and seizing it and holding it very close so that it goes through this crucifixion, that something else emerges and resurrects. Okay? That faucet, open-handed graciousness. You're spilling your purse of beautiful diamonds to be revealed. So, Yakabat, Yabasit, Yakabat, Yabasit. Yakabat, Yabasat, 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 Yakabat. Yabasit, Yakabat, Yabasit. So with Kabbat, you can again seize these things that you wish to transform to perhaps slay or crucify, so that whatever that thing is. You know what? It's actually your very best friend. It's your meditation buddy. It's showing you where your work's to be done. You know, pray to have these challenges, because that is the spiritual path. And you don't try not to give into it, but seize it. Bring it in with the Kabbat. Let it go through a transformation and then release in its true form, its true nature that's meaning to be revealed. Just try it. Use that as a concentration, a meditation. You know, Murshid Samuel Lewis used to give all of his students that meditation of the circle and the dot. And Pure Murshid, an icon, talks about that in the Gathas, the dot and the circle. That's it. It's Kabbat and it's Basit. It's Kabbat, it's Basit. It's towards the one. It's towards the one, united with all. It's towards the one, united with all. It's Kabbat, it's Basit. It's that practice. It's that breathing in. It's that drawing in and it's releasing. So if that helps you, draw a circle with a dot on it, put it on the wall, concentrate on it. Visuals help, and that's why we have religious art in all different traditions. Now I'd like to read this one little piece, and I think we're almost done. It comes from a beautiful book that my friend, the Naqshbandi Sheikh in New Delhi, Saeed Kashif, shared with me. And I will try to make a mental note. If I don't, someone can ask me and I'll send it out to the group. There is a Facebook page. It is called Sufi Literature. Is that right, Gemma? Is that right, Nur Latifa? I think I put you both onto them. And that is a wonderful, if no other reason, get on Facebook, make your account private. So if you don't want to participate, that's fine. They have almost an unbelievable downloadable PDF format of amazing texts by all the great mystics. Some of them are recent scholarly works, not so interested in that, but I am interested in the translations of the great mystic Sufis. And this book is one of them. And I think it is either that or my friend sent it to me, but I'm happy to share a PDF of it. It's a little daunting, it's big, and you kind of have to sift through to find these gems. But the book is titled The Repose of Spirits, A Sufi Commentary of the Divine Names. And it's by Ahmed Sam Ani, and it's translated by William Chatwick. If you know William Chatwick, if you've studied the ancient Sufi text, he's one of the great translators into English. He, along with another great translator, R.A. Nicholson, who did the Kafshan Majub into English, oldest Persian text on Sufism. So these two men have done an amazing thing in making these teachings available. And of course, originally written this Repose of the Spirits, a Sufi Commentary of Divine Names by Ahmed Samani, and then translated. So, but this is just a little, I mean, it was pages and pages and pages, and I always kind of sit through and try to find something. So this is what this is kind of in the chapter on Kabid Basit in there. You know, we get these little dictionary snippets, but you know, in the West, we're bits and bytes people. We're, you know, sound bites. That's what we do. But this is like, this could be 100 pages describing just this one practice. And so this is just a little gem. I'm giving you a little bit and bite from that. And it says, even at the beginning, your inner pearl, you know, this part that Mircha talked about, this soul, this innocent soul, even if at the beginning your inner pearl was mixed with bestial and predatory attributes, those ego, the animal part of ourselves, once it's become sifted by the sieve of good fortune and struggle, so both good fortune and crucifixion, it is worthy of the neighborhood of the Sultan's presence. He knocked at the door. Who is it? It's thyself alone, the Sultan's presence. It is a heavenly pearl on the face of the earth. Wouldn't we all like to be that? A heavenly pearl on the face of this earth. Well, you probably all are. I'm speaking to myself. I'm the one, you know, the reformer, reform oneself. Okay. So it is a heavenly pearl on the face of the earth. What is the expression of this state is the question. And the answer is this. Recognition is the radiance of lights flashing in the hearts and lifting them away from faults to the unseen things. It's the recognition of the radiance of light flashing in the hearts and lifting them, Ya Nur, Ya Hai, and lifting them away from faults to the unseen things. Pearl on the face of the earth. I have a couple more sentences, and these are Mirshit's words. It is selflessness to the extent that even the thought of self is no longer there. I knocked at the door and I was asked, who's there? Thine alone, beloved. But he says, it's the thought of the self. Excuse me, I'm going to start again. It is the selflessness to the extent that even the thought of self is no longer there, that this false self is dead. Recognition, which is the recognition of God. Love accomplishes its work when it spreads its wings and veils oneself from one's own eyes. Now, really, Gemma, make note to self and make sure I do this. Repose of the soul and those beautiful images of the winged sphinx at the Liberty Memorial. Do you remember them, Nur Latifah? This was to the World War I Memorial, and these wings, like this, spreads the wings and veils from oneself from one's own eyes, veils oneself from one's eyes. And those sphinx have done that. Their wings have come forward and they're veiling the faces of those beautiful Art Deco statues. And it's to hide one's eyes from the horror of that war. We sometimes have to hide ourselves from the horror of ourselves. I don't know. Have you not ever felt that way? That you have to, oh my God, you know, or you've done something and then thought about it. Oh my God, if I had only known then what I know now, I'm so conscious. Go hide. I mean, right? Haven't you all done that? I have many, many times. So anyway, I'm making light of it, but I'm also trying to reveal that it happens to us. So these again are Merchant's words. God speaks to oneself. No. God, what is wrong with me? God speaks to everyone and to the ears of every heart. God speaks to everyone. Everyone, no matter who it is, could be the most hardened criminal. You know, some people are greatly reformed through their crimes. There's many stories of saints that have done that, done terrible, heinous things, and have completely repented. You know, Milarepa definitely is one of them. The great stories about him. My God, he was a murderer, was a thief, and you know, but his teacher, what did he do? Crucified him again and again, built the temple, take it down. And then, you know, then he went and he went to the caves. And well, even in the cave, he was haunted. You know, all the demons of himself appeared and kicked him out of the cave, his own cave. You know, he still had the work to do. So it's that, like that, and building the temple, tearing it down. That's what we do. We build our temples, then we have to tear them down to see who we really are. It's a great privilege in life, in a way. Yeah. So God speaks to everyone, to the ears of every heart, but not every heart can hear those words and hear God speaking. The divine's voice is louder than thunder, and God's light is clearer than the sun. If one could only hear it, if one could only see it. To hear and to see, we must remove the wall which we made of ourselves. Then we become the flute upon which the divine player may play music of everlasting love, and then we can rise from the cross into everlasting life. Amen. Let us close with the Khatum, and if you'd like to stay on and have some spiritual conversation, I'll be here. And if you need to leave, that's also okay. And Murshid is here with us. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts, that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Wisdom, most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide merchants and men. But we know he meant men in a big way, you men, which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect peace. Um.